Hello.
Hello, Rob. This is Trent.
Hey, Trent. How are you?
I'm doing well. Kim's up at the North office, and Tyler, his wife had a baby last week.
Oh, wow.
So he's out. But I guess it'll be 2 weeks in this Thursday. So I'm going to catch up with you today, brainstorm.
Okay.
Pick your brain.
Good, good. What's on your mind?
The team's doing great. So the update on that is the households are good. We have very solid flows year to date. We've mentioned things are going well from a team standpoint. I had a meeting last week. I guess the questions continue to be on like social prospecting. I mentioned politically before of what the best way to handle that with clients or with other relationships. Todd Young, the senator, his office called and he stopped by and met with me last week. So him and one of his staff members just came by and they were looking for a campaign check, I'm sure. But it was an interesting meeting, just talking to him one-on-one. And I know someone in politics and just asked them. That they basically briefed me for the meeting. I had the issues. I had things he'd worked on. And had a great conversation with them. And what they always want is bundling, I'm sure, is they want to be introduced or host events or do something to get them in front of other people.
Mm-hmm.
But have you seen people in our business do that? I don't know how that would actually play out. That's something I wouldn't mind doing. But have you known anyone or many people in our business that have done that, gotten politically involved?
No, to be honest with you. I'm not sure you have the risk. When I first came to Indianapolis, I got involved with the Republican Party. But what I found was that I gave to both parties in the end.
Uh-huh.
And as you probably figure out that most people do, business people do, all politics is local. And the more local the politics, the better. In terms of getting to know people, and you'll find that the leverage probably is the more local you can make it.
Uh-huh.
Because those are the people that can actually help you.
Right.
In terms of, I don't know, just issues and getting things done and just being if you have a problem or you need something, well, they're the guys that can make something happen for you. And they're connected to senators and congressmen and other people. So, but you can help your clients sometimes by knowing people in politics. So
right.
It's a constituency that is smart to know and to give to, but I probably would not be the leader.
Don't dedicate time to it.
Yeah, I would just give money and get to know people and go to events versus bundling and throwing cocktail parties and so forth.
Got it. Good.
Okay.
That's exactly what I needed. Cut to the chase. Saves me a lot of time of chasing it down or thinking it through further. The other things I've been working on, still expanding the symphony. I'm on the executive committee of the symphony now.
Good.
So that's been a really good crew to get to know. And that, and then the Harrison Center, that's a local arts and community development organization on the board of that. And that led to a nice size account that we got. So it is
a corporate account.
And meeting good people through that. And then I've gotten into a network of people through a couple of Lilly retirees that I know, but they're very intellectual. So they have like reading groups, and it's a really neat little cohort of people that I've gotten in the middle of. And Tyler and I have been working to develop, don't know what to call it, the mastermind idea of some kind of affinity group that would be like a smart money group think tank. Of getting a group together, and these are the people we go to when we have questions, when we're formulating our ideas. You are the first person that comes to mind as of just someone that we go to that we view as basically this part of the smart money group of thinking wisely. And then that group, so once we build this group, well, your first impression while I'm on that, what kind of size of a group is reasonable for something like that? For a mastermind group is usually what, like three, maybe 4 to 6, maybe 7 people?
Yeah, 4 to, whatever you can comfortably get around the dinner table and not feel as though you're yelling.
So that's a good benchmark of a conversational group that can all work together.
Right.
Maybe a 6 to 8 person group. And if we did get into, the senator wanted to come in town and assemble in front of a group, we've got the group. Here's our group. We get together for a lot of things like this. And that would
Right.
be our group that we ask advice of, that we, there are a lot of them are our core clients and our centers of influence. We try to help them, help us all learn together, grow together, growing portfolios and growing people. I think it's a
Yeah, that's a really that really is a mastermind group. Not a mastermind group to, but I mean that's what Edison's mastermind group was. There wasn't, it was just a group of really smart people.
Yeah, with common interest.
Yeah, they were all, there was nothing really common about, except they're all business people. In a sense, right? It was
Henry
Edison,
Ford.
Firestone, Burroughs, Ford. Imagine that group, how much fun that would be to be there.
Yeah.
What they figured out. I mean, so that's, that's something that you can, I mean, that's more the theme of what your group is, bringing smart people together to kind of figure out the future.
Right. That.
That's a great mission.
Yeah. So we convene on a regular basis, maybe once a quarter, just to talk about things topically, and we would bring an agenda, and then just as opportunities arise, if we have money managers that want to speak or someone useful that comes in, just do a quick call with the group, 30 minutes, with the idea of helping people. We all learn together. We're all growing together. Co-elevate is a word I got last year from Keith Ferrazzi, where you co-elevate. We all try to help each other go to a higher level. So on that note, what? Oh, well, go ahead. You have a thought there.
No, that's great.
So what's your thought on the big picture now? Totally shifting gears.
I think the I think the bull to bear ratio has got to be pretty crazy right now, and I think the oversold is pretty crazy, and I think technically it's way oversold, and there's almost panic right now. That's a pretty good environment. So, how long it lasts, I don't know, and how deep it goes, but that's a pretty constructive environment for buying.
And
Hard
what?
to, the prices aren't cheap, but you can buy, Abdi at a very cheap price, and they're turning things around. I think in this environment, I think you're going to have to be selective. Abdi's paying almost 7% dividend, and I think it's all based on their earnings estimate. But I don't, who am I? But they're finding more and more uses for ibrutinib, and they just have to, they're like any other drug company. They got to figure out new drugs and find other partners to partner up with to, to get the leverage to get the growth.
That's your thought. Oversold.
I mean, you're not, Abby's not going down much unless there's something I don't know about it.
Right, it's hard to fall off the curve. They're already down.
Right. So you don't want to, you want to, adding new money. I'd be comfortable adding new money to things that are pretty washed out.
Yeah, dividends. High yield.
Dividends are going to protect you here. and you're going to need that for a while. There's too many uncertainties with no clear out. I mean, Trump is trying to change the whole world at once, and it's there's a price you pay for that. It's like redoing your house, like Christopher, all at once. It's pretty hard.
Disruptive.
And no one is cooperating with him.
No
one. Think about it. Not even his own party is cooperating.
Right.
So
they're waiting on the next election, it seems.
Yeah, and he's not doing himself any favors because he gets pissed off and then tweets. You know, he's got a. It's like throwing your tennis racket because you're losing.
Right, it doesn't help. Yeah, snowballs. It seems with the yield curve inversion, that's going to create, well, it is, it's a self-fulfilling cycle now that all the algorithms, all the computers see an inverted yield curve means sell.
Right.
That's oversold. Part of the reason we're getting this oversold today. It could get worse before it gets better, as we know. I haven't read of any signs. Our global stress indicator has ticked up a little bit, but not to extreme levels yet. It's actually become a contrary indicator or a bottom indicator because when the stress levels have gotten up, the governments have panicked and negotiated and settled over the past 4 years. Whenever we got to these levels, the market stops panicking when the government starts panicking.
Right.
That may be the case now. Yeah, so many uncertainties. We're in a seasonally weak period as well.
Right.
But you'd be a buyer of dividend payers. That's your thought.
Well, I think of Simon trying to get in this market now, you know, being a little bit new to the game, you hate to have him get in and lose immediately, you know.
True.
And so you got these new people coming in, and all of a sudden they're getting whacked right off the bat. So I think you got to be careful with them because, you know, you really want to buy a lot of bonds in here or, you know. So I'm just trying to think of where I'd add money. I mean, there's certain stocks that have held up amazingly well. CoStar, there's been a handful, but the little guys are getting crushed. So you can't be speculating in here.
And you have to be really close watching on the stop loss mentality. The losses can run away quickly in a market like this.
Right.
That's something I've been trying to watch within the investing for growth strategy. Even though we're not technically market timing, we just don't want to let losses run away on anything.
Have you made? I mean, are we getting any down ticks in terms of estimates?
Not substantially. Not on any of our core holdings. We've had a couple of them removed. Amazon had an estimate cut, but their estimates tend to go all over the place. And we've held them as a core holding. Boeing had estimate cuts, and we sold them. I should have sold them higher, but I'm just cautious it's going to get worse. They've written off $8.5 billion, but our analyst thinks it's going to take about $13.5 billion total to clean up the mess. And that just seems like a sign of bad leadership for them to not have some kind of sign of when this is going to get fixed after this long. So
there's no noise, right? There's nobody, you're getting no feedback. Like, do you hear that they're on the same path to try and do a technology fix, or is it now a structural fix?
No, we don't know. No information. And we actually bought CVS. Going a little more defensive, but it comes up on strong earnings estimates. It has good downside protection. Infi, we bought IPHI, it's a small semiconductor company, smaller position, and Fortinet. Fortinet had good news, but was down from the high. Bought it at about 81, so we're down a couple of points on it now. That looks like a good one for long term.
It's a tough game.
It is. And they,
Right
with the
now.
quants, with the hedge funds, high frequency traders driving so much volatility day to day, this is another interesting day to look at the percentage losses on so many stocks that are virtually, they're very similar across the board. All stocks are 2 to 3% down.
Which is a lot.
Yeah. So Merck is down 1.7%, and Google is only down 2.4%. So to me, that's a sign of program trading or just massive index selling.
Right. Because Merck shouldn't be down. I mean, Merck's been having just had good news.
All right, good news, good strong dividend, defensive. If we are having a slowing economy, if we do have a recession around the corner, that's a type of company that should hold up well. So we have to get through it. Are you comfortable with your overall allocation? I'm sure you're speaking to Kim about that.
Well, you're never comfortable when your stocks are going down, but
You're right.
I think I don't know, Trent. It's a good question. I try and be opportunistic. Try and be on the other side of things, but you're not dealing with the rational world. That's the problem. China's not a rational world. So you've got an irrational organization that will hold on to power at any cost. So you think you're dealing with rational people and they're irrational, so you just have no clue. They don't care if they kill themselves. They'll just want to hold on to power. So when you think, well, we'll just make their pain increase, it's like trying to make the Japanese pain increase during World War II. Their ability to sustain pain was beyond imagination. It took an atomic bomb to get them off of. They would have sacrificed their whole country rather than give up.
Yeah.
So, what's China willing to do in order to retain control? So you think, well, they'll bend like we will. And that's the problem. You're not dealing with a democracy and rational people. So the good news is they're a buyer of our products, and we're a big buyer of their products. So we are mutually beneficial for each other, but people do irrational things for, crazy reasons.
Right.
So
Yeah. And the
that's
other irrational thing out there that's not in the textbooks of negative interest rates. $11 trillion of negative yielding bonds across the world.
right.
Oh, it just.
Where does that fit,
Yeah, that's an unknown.
So
Where the old rules don't apply, it's there.
you're buying a zero coupon bond that guarantees you're not going to get your money back.
Yeah. And that's a better alternative, evidently, than investing it in the European economy or the other economies. That's a market betting on deflation, it seems.
Right. And so therefore gold becomes, a rational alternative, as does cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, true. Yeah, if you're not making a yield on your cash, then other no yield options look
Yeah,
better.
because gold then becomes much more rational because so you don't want to invest in gold because it doesn't pay a dividend. Well, at least you hold your value, or you're guaranteed to lose your value in the zero and those discounted bonds. So
Right.
hence the reason gold's going up. It hasn't gone up in years and years,
Yeah, and the
So.
chart looks really strong. It's one of the best charts out there.
I bought gold, but I used it as a money market fund, and when I needed cash, I sold it. I should have kept it as an investment.
Yeah, it's worked out well year to date. And the producers look good as well, like Wheaton and Kirkland Lake. I followed them recently. Wheaton Precious Metals, WPM. That actually has a yield. I think it's 1.5% yield, and they're a miner of silver and gold. Silver has much more in the way of industrial uses as well. A lot of silver demand you probably read about. So what's
Right.
interesting, if you look going back, oh, go ahead.
Unless the economy is going to slow, and then you don't want to own copper or silver.
Anything industrial. Yeah, right.
Right.
True. And gold.
So gold is just
Again.
a store of wealth. And you don't buy it for its usage.
Yeah. So what
So,
I'm. Oh, go ahead.
are you getting any, you're not getting any negative feedback yet?
Not yet. We actually had the case a couple of weeks ago where someone who is less aggressive, we got him up at most up to 70% in equity. And we'd had a big year. We were back up to the goal level, and I tried to get him to raise cash to go from 70% equity back to 60% equity, and they wouldn't do it. So that to me was the first little warning sign that just anecdotal evidence that we're getting maybe a little toppy when it's hard to sell. But the negative feedback has not started yet. It's just happened within the last couple of days. And with those wild swings, it's just teaching people that you can't predict it when you have another 400-point up day yesterday after a terrible day Monday, and then we're back down today. From my experience, those high levels of volatility, though, have been associated with a change of leadership or some type of shift in the regime. And I wonder if this is signaling a major shift.
How do you
Don't know
mean?
that. Of if we are going into, well, the volatility where it's either, we're either going to break up or break down. If with these high volatility days, this period we've been in the past month or so,
Right.
that something has to give. Either over, and that's my hunch is that we're, this is overestimated. That if it, the pain gets bad enough, Trump is going to settle with China. The global economy will improve. It'll end up being a buying opportunity. But I'm trying to be open in my mind to alternate views of what if I'm wrong? What if we are running into something bigger of a global slowdown? And how would that affect the portfolio?
Well, you got to have counterbalancing forces. The cutting the Fed, cutting interest rates will happen, and it'll be bigger. It'll be 50 basis points. But the market is moves on earnings, right? So if earnings go down, market goes down. In spite of the cutting the Fed. So you're the Fed's completely out of whack right now. It
Big
should
part of the
be.
problem that adds to the big uncertainties you mentioned about China, and then the old rules not apply with negative interest rates and the Fed.
The Fed is at least 50, it's probably 100 basis points out of whack right now, where it should be. And then we
Yeah,
wouldn't
the,
have our negative, then we wouldn't have a negative yield curve.
oh right, yeah. If they would take short-term interest rates to a 1.25, they'd create a upward slope.
Right.
That
So,
was reminiscent. That terrible press conference and what's going on with the Fed right now reminds me of 1994. But it's the opposite. We were worried about inflation then. We're worried about deflation now. That could change from day to day. But Greenspan came out in early '94 and he said he was worried about inflation, but he only raised rates by a quarter point. And the market was really confused by that. And it took 9 months for things to sort out. I remember in '94, George Kemp and I used to joke that we brought in money every month, but our asset totals went down every month. And that seems to be Powell now. What was then? I called one of the traders in New York, got a hold of a bond trader, and they just said Greenspan lost the trust of the market. Market didn't trust him anymore because he says he's concerned about inflation, but he only cuts by a quarter basis or only raises by a quarter basis point.
Right.
That seems to be where Powell is now. That what's a quarter basis point do? Either you want, you're concerned or not. So hopefully they will do a 50 basis points at the next meeting, and go back to being data dependent.
Right. And, you know, Germany is not a party right now. And China's slowing down. So, you know, if the citizenship of the United States starts to smell a rat, they'll pull in their horns and then we'll start to slow. And if we slow, then the world slows. So what stimulus are we going to give it? Even 50 basis points won't do it. We'll go into a gradual decline that will be, you know, protracted. That's the problem. These expansions and protractions look like they're long, elongated.
Mm-hmm. And shallower, at least
harder
on the expansion.
Shallower and harder to move. Right, harder to move the economies because they don't react to the interest rates anymore. So what are you going to do? You're going to buy securities. You're going to buy things. Increase the balance sheet of the Fed, and who knows if that's proven to have done anything, right? Japan's still stuck.
Right. Yeah, those who've tried it has not worked.
Right. So it means stock selection is more and more and more important.
The
problem is when they sell the indexes and even your great selection, you know, go down.
Yeah.
Like you said.
But it'll pay off over time. It'll pay off.
It will pay off. Yeah, because earnings matter. So I think there's a lot of, I mean, there are nine cranes, at least in this city right now. So there are pockets of explosion of growth. And so you look for those opportunities and go after them, you know.
Yeah. That's what we try to find. Right. We're trying to find markets or try to find companies that have markets that are growing.
Right.
So that's Amazon, the cloud, defense. Every country in the world would love to have the F-35 from Lockheed Martin. Those companies with expandable markets. Or on the other hand, companies where the expectation is so low that anything better than disaster is going to be a positive surprise. Like
right.
AbbVie. Companies with a good yield where they're already down, those seem to be the opportunities, like the barbell, companies that can still grow in a slowing economy because they're so structurally well-positioned.
Now, AstraZeneca has really done well, okay?
Yeah.
Much as AbbVie's gone down, AstraZeneca's gone up. So that was a good balancing act for me.
Yeah, that would work out really well.
So I don't know whether that one fits in your increasing earnings estimates or not, but they seem to be right place, right time, counter, don't sell off very much when the market goes down, you know. So I think there's a group of stocks, CoStar being one of them, that just seem to be very strong, relative strength. And so I think you need that. Now, you know, can they hold up against a terrible tape? Who knows? But they have for years, and that to me is a pretty good sign, right?
Right. They're in the 37th percentile on analyst revisions, so they're in the middle range. They come up really high on earnings quality. Institutional screening, very good balance sheet on AstraZeneca.
Okay.
Earnings are middle of the road.
Verisk, VRSK, another amazing relative strength stock. No one, these never come up on any news show or anything. CoStar or Verisk, AstraZeneca, they never come up. Nobody talks about them.
Yeah. I've heard some people mention that if they don't borrow money, they don't get investment bank coverage most of the time. So a lot of your low debt companies won't get research coverage if they're not borrowing,
right.
They're not issuing new stock.
So it's I think my Blue Prism is about to get wiped out here. I think there's a bunch of AI companies that are getting smashed because there's some scandals around that they're overestimating their use of AI just to get private equity money and stuff. So the low price stocks are Box and, you know, these stocks are killing. So they're not going to change the portfolio performance, but they are a pain in the butt.
Yeah, not fun to watch.
So we're almost 600 down. Okay.
Trying to find
a
bottom.
For you guys, yeah, for you guys, one of the things that you want to be thinking about is budgeting for next year. And marketing from a budgeting point of view is an interesting way to do it. The average financial is probably, how many FAs in your office?
About 90 total.
Budget? Of the 90 FAs, how many actually have a budget for marketing and sales and charitable contributions and other things?
We have one for charitable. I don't know anyone that puts it to that degree of detail.
How many car dealers do you think do that?
100%.
Right. Who's smarter, you guys or car dealers?
Well, they're smarter at growing business. We may be smarter intellectually, but they're more well attuned to how to proactively grow business in a competitive environment.
So my point is made, I guess, in the sense that wouldn't it make sense to put together a comprehensive budget for 2020 encompassing all areas and decide what you want, what you need, what you're going to do, what you need then to make that happen, and then where the money's going to come from.
Mm-hmm. What's a healthy budget as a percentage of revenue?
Well, I would say for you guys, you probably should budget $100,000.
100 grand. And then what goes into that?
I would say sales, marketing, advertising, salaries, charitable contributions.
So you view charitable as marketing as well?
Of course.
Never give anonymously?
Never.
One of your quotes I got.
Right. So, you know, so you have an intern, that's a budget, right? You have your charities, that's a budget. So what you should do is you should go back and figure out how much you're spending this year overall in everything.
And then back into it from there, increase it, and then evaluate where we're spending it. I've never broken it down like that. We do it more on a one-on-one basis as events come along or opportunities. And
right.
That's what we find. We've got to really change our event structure because we get the same people that are already happy with us, and they're not bringing their friends. So we have to turn our events more into marketing and listen.
You know, when you're doing the same thing over and over, like, you know, the opera or anybody else, you know, after a while you get the same people going to each event and you don't get any growth and you don't get any new blood, and therefore it becomes quite stale.
Yeah.
So a tip of the hat for doing what you're doing, but, you know, is it the most effective, and are you using all the outside sources of capital that are available? So, for example, I mean, just think about who could help you, right? What are the sources of capital? Why don't you tell me what you think are the sources of capital?
That'd be typically the wholesalers. They want to help us build the business, so they'll usually have some kind of budget. And going back to your idea, though, of budgeting, I think not only budgeting money, possibly more importantly, is budgeting time of marketing on the calendar and the human capital side of it, of how much energy we put into it, maybe even more important than how much time we put into it. If we could build it into our calendar of having a focused marketing, we have added a focused marketing effort, however best we organize that.
Well, it's your time, you're allocating sources of capital and sources of time, right?
Right. We've got to think what else to cut back on and where to get the capital, our own revenue. I prefer a lot of times to spend our own revenue because we're not tied down to anyone. If we utilize a wholesaler, they want to come in and meet the next week, and they take more of our time. They may give us money, but they take our time. So that's a really interesting way to view it, of budgeting that for next year, budgeting and marketing, and getting the plan together. We've done it this pretty well this year, I think, just due to Tyler's organizational efforts. He's been much more in the prospecting mode. So he just asks the questions more, and he follows up a little bit more closely, and here we are with 14 good households year to date.
What are some other sources of revenues?
You can play on events that are already in motion. So Chamber of Commerce or other organizations may already have events that we could plug into, becoming an expert. And a really interesting area right now is opportunity zones. Have you heard much about that?
Yes.
What do you think of it?
I think it's great.
You think
nobody knows about them? It's a product. And anytime you get a product that's new and nobody's heard of and actually works, then you got yourself an opportunity. You may not want to put an entire portfolio into it, but the fact that people haven't heard about it, it's like, if, for example, let's say we just invented municipal bonds, and you didn't tell me about it. Somebody else did. I would be happy that the other person would have told me, and pissed off that you didn't tell me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that could be an opportunity in the opportunity zones right now to become an expert on that and speak more about it. And that could be an external marketing asset. If someone needs a speaker on that, you can come in and be the expert.
But it's also
I've been studying up on it. It was a big part of our conversation with Senator Young last week.
Well, and you guys have products, right, that you can sell.
Yeah, we have a Brookfield Opportunity Zone Fund right now that's open. They're focused more on real estate, and I think the more interesting opportunity is businesses. It's not only real estate, but businesses located in an opportunity zone. As long as 50% of their work is done in that opportunity zone, or there's three metrics that they have to have an established business presence in the opportunity zone. But you could found a software company in an opportunity zone, and as long as 50% of your work was done in that location, all the capital gains would be tax-free.
Right.
Which sounds too good to be true. But that's the other major opportunity of it is as private equity and as business ownership, not just real estate. Most people are associating it with real estate, I think, at this point. But going back, that could be an external marketing asset of opportunities just to speak. So that I guess I just think of the company, Bank of America. It's so interesting that last year we got 15 grand, and we always partner. Going back to when you were manager, we would always ask for any kind of partnership rather than asking the office for a donation, quote unquote. We would always say, we're putting in 5 grand. Will you put in 5 grand to sponsor this major donors event? So we sponsored that this year. But the interesting for Qantas International, they have their 500 biggest donors in the world, and we're able to host a reception at their international convention. And we pay 10 grand. They're a major client, so we're getting much more in revenue from that. But to us, that's a major marketing event. That that's an external, that's their endorsement of us. They have little table tents on all the tables, and they've got our logo, our team's logo there. But interestingly enough, the Bank of America cut Brooke Thompson's budget back to zero. She has no, or as far as I know, maybe she's given it to other teams, but she has no discretionary money to spend in the community this year. So it's more on the team. That's not, and that's definitely not going to be an external resource. Outside of that, what other ones do you know?
How much does she give personally?
Brooke Thompson?
Mm-hmm.
Good question.
What charity is she involved in?
I do not know. Never asked her that. We did have dinner with Andy Sieg last week, which was interesting.
And what did he say? How much? What's his budget?
Yeah, good question. They flew into town after Carl's team left.
Whose team left?
Oh,
did you say Carl?
Yeah, Carl retired at the end of the year. And
yeah.
His daughter, and Lizzie and Brooke May, went to Jim Dixon's operation where they went to Sanctuary.
Oh, cut the shit.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I was blown away. They were the last team I would have thought. There they are. And from what I hear, they're not taking all their assets.
Was that endorsed by Carl?
They think so. They haven't found last I heard, they had not found a smoking gun. But if they find that he was part of recruiting clients to go away from Merrill, he'll have to pay back his CTP. It's probably $3-4 million, the transition package. So I hope not. For Carl's sake.
Holy shit. Why would they do that? That's crazy.
It seems like it to me. So the only feel I can get, I was actually asking the MFS, we use MFS, and I was asking them their take on it. And the wholesaler thinks that they're selling, I guess Goldman Sachs has been buying RIAs across the country, small RIAs. And Dixon may be evidently selling the idea of, well, let's build an RIA, and then we'll get bought out. So rather than going there, that I assume they'd get little upfront money, if any. So they're just taking the equity ownership. And she's on the board. Lizzie's on the board of the new organization.
Wow.
It seems crazy to me. It's an experiment. It's an unbundled. Do you know Sanctuary at all? Are you familiar with them?
I mean, I just heard, you know, I just read about Jim going over there and what he's doing.
It's an unbundled RIA. So they're transfer. They have like two different sets of transfer paperwork. Things are held in different places. This sounds tremendously cumbersome from a client's point of view. And Martin went over there. Martin Rice went early this year. And then Lizzie and Brooke went. So that, I guess, got us on Andy C's calendar. He flew into town. Make sure we're not losing anyone else, or try to prevent losing anyone else.
Is that so? The president flies in?
Yeah, he came in and went. He had a town hall, and then he went to dinner. That's, I guess, it's been 3-4 weeks, so we've had a little bit of a time. And Paul Lambert came down from Chicago.
What's he like?
Paul, he's a good, solid guy. He gets things done. He is more passive, so he more answers questions and addresses things. He's more reactive than proactive, I would say. Rate him on a scale. 1 to 10, he's probably a 7 or 8. He does no harm. Follows up, gets things done. Andy's a very smart guy. I just think he's in a tough spot between the bank and Merrill. I came away pretty positive, though, from Andy's meeting. He's a really smart guy. Did you work with him much, Andy C?
Yeah, he was on the stage with me in Supernova.
Oh.
He was in charge of the advisory center.
Yeah, he turned it around of Edge at the time.
He's the one that I made his career there. Because think about it, right?
That's when all the
No
accounts
one
started going there.
Right. We would actually have, he would close the center except for us.
Right. That made his numbers look really good, this huge influx of accounts.
Every time we do a kickoff, we did 14 kickoffs. Every time we do a kickoff, he would reserve for a month us. And we'd back up the truck and fill his coffers with accounts. So he became a hero.
Right. In the FA, we would cut our accounts back from 800 to 500. We make a little bit of progress.
Well, some people went from
chip away,
you know, 600 to 200. So,
yeah.
You know.
I like the Tony Singh model.
George Kemp, you know, went from 640 to 33. So those counts went somewhere, right?
Right. Yeah. He's a smart guy. He seems like more of a technocrat, not as much of a visionary.
He's never an FA.
Oh, true.
He doesn't know. He doesn't really know what we do. But other than that, I'm
we
sure he's
good
very good
it.
Good at cutting budgets.
True. Yeah. And we have been growing. It's not huge. We're growing more than the other firms.
Right. The that's really disappointing with Carl. Carl was the good guy. I mean,
yeah.
He was my go-to guy when I needed, you know, a good, solid guy. Never a problem. Never. So that's just weird.
Yeah,
big account. That's just strange. Anyway, I would look at that and try and figure out what the hell happened, really. A lot of times they get no respect, the children of the FA get no respect. So go to a new place, they then are the man or the woman. You know, it's their practice then instead of Carl's practice.
Mm-hmm.
That's an issue. I had that happen a couple of times. So I was always very paranoid when it came to children.
Like an insecurity on their part.
Totally.
Feeling like they don't have the same credibility.
They're never given any respect by the office.
Huh.
And so you have to go out of your way to give them respect in order to keep them, your ego from freaking out. So it's, anyway, it's a dangerous situation.
Yeah, to me, it seems tremendously unwise for them to do that.
Especially, I mean, does she really have the skills that Carl had?
No.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe she had to go because she needed rice or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I think she could probably manage it along. It'll be interesting to see. But she couldn't have grown it, I don't think, in the first place like Carl did.
It's just a weird situation. Sorry for the office.
Yeah, that is.
But cutting cutting the manager's budget to zero is not a good idea.
Yeah, the discretionary budget.
Well, you just say you don't count. You know, we're not letting you run your business. Just remember, I used to spend $140,000 on training a year. That no one gave me permission to spend. Larry Wilson, $100,000, and Jim Lehrer, $40,000. And I'd spend it in the hope that I wouldn't get dinged and I'd end up number one, you know?
They didn't have number one on the masters, and then it all got approved. It was good at that point.
Right, the masters, supernova, you know, I always had to be number one at something, and then you come to number one as an office and gross and district, then, you know, you don't have a problem. So it was, that was my attitude. I, you know, plus I had my own budget for marketing and things like that. It wasn't a big budget, maybe $25,000 or $50,000 for charitable contributions. And then I'd put in, I spent $40,000 a year on the myself out of my pocket on the Colts suite. And then I would submit tickets whenever a client used it or you guys used it. But otherwise, I paid it myself.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I asked what her budget was. So my budget, remember, I had tickets for the Pacers.
Right.
And I did other things. I probably spent $100,000 out of my pocket a year. So, you know, how much are they
spending? Your R&D. It's like your R&D budget of a tech company, or your business development.
Right. Okay. So we got to go, but here's your mission, okay?
Well, going back to your $140,000 in training, part of that $40,000 going to LGE definitely turned my life around. It made a big difference for me. I went the office paid once, and then I went three more times on my own. It was that impactful.
I only allowed people that did a million to go. And instead of taking them for a steak dinner, when they did a million, I would take them there. So I took all the guys. So I took 40 a year and whatever. Maybe it cost me $100,000. I forget. But then I'd do the extensions on the masters, which was 40,000 too.
Oh, right. Yeah, the European trips.
So you've got to be creative, Trent. Okay, so start with the budget you have, then kind of make up what would be an ideal budget, and then start getting creative, and then kind of mesh it all together.
Yeah. The only one we've had so far is the events and charitable, and that's about $25,000 we're spending this year on sponsoring events for a client organization. Okay, we'll go
figure the
that.
The other source of capital would be other organizations, like you said. The you know, if you do something in conjunction with the Kiwanis, or you do something in conjunction with somebody else, but you can also do something in conjunction with a partner, like a CPA firm or a law firm.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great call. Yeah, because we've been building a good relationship with a nonprofit CPA. Good. So that's my homework. Start building that marketing budget for 2020.
Yeah, and come up with, you know, and a recognition party for your enthusiastically endorsed professionals.
Yeah.
It would be a great use of capital. And then your ambassadors club would be a great use of capital, taking them out on the Chicago River for a dinner cruise.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good ideas as always.
Well,
always
I mean,
good
that's
to catch up,
paid,
bro.
What I get paid for. my thing was not ever I always had a cornucopia of ideas. I just needed people to implement them.
Right. People to actually do it.
People would actually do it. I could come up with a million ideas. Then I just needed interns and staff and sales managers and other people to do them. And, you know, Marianne to cover my ass because she was a detail person. So just figure out who you are. And then, you know, I think Tyler's a pretty creative guy. So, you know, you put put all your creative hats on and get together with Kim and you and have lunch and take Linda and go ahead and have lunch and come up with, you know, your plan.
Yeah.
Work
and
out,
that's something
work
hopefully
out
Samantha can drive down the road to with her being a young
right.
FA.
Yeah, so bring Samantha, of course. And But put your, you know, do as much of the homework as you can so that you have some concrete structure to it. And then you can have them either be wacko creative or just a little creative, depending on their brain.
Mm-hmm. I like it. We try stuff. You know, our team, we're not averse to trying new things. We're always trying new things. We rebuild it. If it doesn't work,
right,
reassess it, try again.
Now's the time, you know, now's the perfect time. The markets are volatile. People are uncertain. This is perfect for you. Right? They don't need you when it's going straight up.
Right.
They need you when it's all over the place and they have no clue. These opportunity zones are a gold mine. Okay? Tell the story. Don't hold back. Tell it. Put it on your list of... You have a 24-month calendar, right? Of ideas to talk to clients about.
Yeah.
Put that a top priority.
Yeah, we're building that now, the calendar, with our new Brooke Wilson hired on. That was our CA3, our third CA, some of the details we hadn't been able to handle, just having that gap. She is phenomenal. She's like a CA version of Tyler. She's
don't make me hear about opportunity zones from UBS, okay?
Hey, got it. Yeah, tell us.
Which I did, by the way.
All right.
Okay.
Lesson learned.
So I got briefed. Now I'm briefed. Now I'm interested in what you guys have to offer because I know what they're offering.
Good deal.
Okay, so it's just it's really important. You don't make judgments for people, okay, in terms of what they want to do. You give them the opportunity to say no.
I like it.
Okay.
It's great info.
Yeah, thanks
for taking the extra time.
You're welcome.
Rob. It's good to catch up.
See
ya. Bye-bye.